Okay, so let's generate our motivation. And appreciate the opportunity to listen to the Dharma, especially hearing about the paths and stages to awakening, which is a map of how to go to full Buddhahood, the way traversed by all the Buddhists of the past, the way that's being practiced by all the Bodhisattvas of the present, and the way that we too will proceed along the path. And so with great joy, let's hear these teachings with the intention to put them into practice in order to attain full enlightenment for the benefit of each and every sentient being, no matter whether we like them or don't like them, or approve of their ideas or don't, no matter whether they help us or harm us, to have a kind heart towards them. Okay, so last week we were, no, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the path of accumulation and how the bodhisattvas practice on that path, and the four stages, the four kinds of bodhicitta that are found on that path. And we also talked about how those bodhisattvas are... probably have serenity by that time. And if they don't, they actualize it on the path of accumulation. And they're practicing very hard in order to unite that serenity with insight so that analytical meditation can induce the pliancy that brings on serenity, focused on emptiness. And when they succeed in that, then they go to the path of preparation. So, you know, that transition from one path to the other occurs in meditative equipoise. Okay, when they get this union of serenity and insight focused on emptiness. Now, we were talking before about how the path of accumulation and path of preparation were called the paths of belief. And it's also, you know, because they believe in emptiness, even though they haven't actualized it. But what's also happened on the paths of belief are that the manifest forms of the five afflictive views have been suppressed due to the bodhisattva's conviction that suchness, emptiness, is the nature of all phenomena. Okay? So when we have five afflictive views, do you remember what they are? First one,
personal identity.
Okay, that's grasping at the true existence of I and mine. Okay, view holding to an extreme, what's that one?
Holding things to either be inherently true, existent, or eternal, absolute, or holding things to be non-existent.
Yeah, so falling to the extremes of eternalism or nihilism, eternalism being inherent existence and nihilism being non-existence. And that's specifically applying to the self, but in general to all phenomena. And third?
Holding wrong views as supreme.
Okay, so holding... all the other views as supreme. Okay, those first two views, holding them as supreme. And fourth?
Holding bad ethical conduct as supreme, or bad ethics.
Yeah, so holding bad ethics or wrong modes of conduct as the actual path and as virtuous, you know, ways to practice. It's interesting in this one that our definition and the Mahayana and the Theravada definition seem to differ, because my friends in the Theravada tradition describe it much more as being attached to rites and rituals,
Okay, and so that is kind of the thing, you know, kind of, but it's not just being attached, it's having attachment to the wrong behavior, attachment to the wrong, clinging, or the view of the wrong paths as being the supreme ones. But there, you know, there's a different translation of this term, even though the term in Sanskrit and Pali are the same, and there's a different meaning, it seems like. And then the last one?
Wrong views,
which are? What's a wrong view?
Cause and effect of our actions.
Okay, so not believing in karma and its effects. What else?
Not believing the three jewels as existent.
Yeah, so thinking the three jewels are non-existent.
Possibility of awakening.
Yeah, thinking enlightenment is impossible.
Not believing in rebirth.
Yeah. It's not just not believing in rebirth. It's holding the wrong view that there's no such thing. Okay, so lots of people don't believe in rebirth, but they may have doubt, they may have any other states of mind, but this is specifically, you know, a very reductionist view. Okay. Okay, so those five wrong views are all the manifest forms of them, you know, aren't present because those bodhisattvas have such strong conviction in emptiness as the nature of phenomena. Okay. So today we're going to go specifically into the Mahayana path of preparation. Okay, so from our text, it says the definition of a Mahayana path of preparation is a Mahayana clear realizer of the meaning. Okay, so remember that the path of accumulation was a Mahayana clear realizer of the doctrine, and then here is a clear realizer of the meaning. So there's a correct view of emptiness. You know, the meaning is clearly realized, you know, and it's correct, but it's not yet perceived directly. Okay, so when these are divided, there's four, the Mahayana heat, peak, forbearance, or also called fortitude, and supreme mundane dharmas, or supreme mundane qualities, paths of preparation. Okay, and each of these four has three parts, small, middling, and great, because one must accumulate the collections for many thousands of great eons during each of the four Mahayana paths of preparation, heat and so forth. And therefore, the Mahayana path of preparation is superior to the fundamental vehicle path of preparation, also by way of divisions. So the fundamental vehicle path of preparation wasn't, each of the four stages wasn't divided into three subdivisions, but the Mahayana is, and it has to do with the fact that you have to accumulate so much merit during these four. Okay, so whereas in the fundamental vehicle path, you know, for an arhat, you can go from, you know, you can accomplish it in three lifetimes as a solitary realizer in 100 aeons. For the bodhisattva to transverse it, it takes three countless great eons. So one countless great eon is spent between these first two paths, the paths of belief, path of accumulation, path of preparation, the reason you need so long is because you've got to accumulate so much merit. Okay, so this is why these bodhisattvas, you know, make so much generosity, and why they, you know, are very generous, practice very good ethical conduct, practice patience, yeah, develop their joyous effort, you know, so they do many actions to benefit sentient beings, and they make, you know, incredible offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and, you know, do this with a bodhicitta motivation and with some awareness of dependent arising and emptiness in order to accumulate the two collections. Okay? So the text here is really taking, wanting to point out that there's a difference between the fundamental vehicle path of preparation and the Mahayana vehicle path of preparation, even though both of them, in terms of the realization of emptiness, you know, the demarcation line is having a, you know, the union of serenity and special serenity and insight on emptiness. And even though on, you know, while you're doing that, you're, you know, the emptiness you're meditating on is the same. Okay? But the path is really different because of so much having to accumulate so much merit. Okay? So that's why you see, you know, I mean, even now we have so many practices to accumulate merit, don't we? If you look at the seven limb prayer, you know, a lot of it is about accumulating merit. We do the mandala offerings. If you look at the preliminary practices, the nine preliminaries, yeah, you have the mandala offerings, you're making satsa, you're offering water bowls, yeah. So there's a lot of things that have to do with offering and a lot of things that have to do with purification. So these practices really help us, you know. And we may do them now, but when you do them, you know, and you're on the path of accumulation, then you really accumulate a lot of merit. Yeah, I mean, we're just kind of pouring water and, you know, doing things like that. But you know, when you can really have a mind that is really, you know, making offerings with sincerity and generosity and bodhicitta and all, then accumulate so much merit. Okay, so another thing that is also important to realize that when on the path of preparation, the emptiness that's the object of serenity and insight, yeah, is put it this way, the object one's meditating on, you know, to attain this union of serenity and insight is the emptiness of inherent existence. It's not just the Four Noble Truths, and it's not coarse selflessness like the emptiness of a permanent unitary independent self or the emptiness of a self-sufficient substantially existent self. Okay? It's got to be the emptiness of inherent existence. Okay, so that's really important, you know, because you may meditate on those other kinds of selflessness beforehand, and those act as a preparation for realizing emptiness. But, you know, the realization of emptiness here is the real key thing. Okay, so the text goes on. As soon as one on the great path of accumulation attains a unity of serenity and insight observing emptiness, he or she passes to the heat path of preparation. So that's the demarcation line, and heat is that first stage. Moreover, positing the division of the path of preparation into four, heat and so forth, so heat, fortitude, heat, peak, fortitude, and supermundane dharma. So dividing it into those four by way of the stages of the gradual diminishment of the elaborations of dualistic appearance at the time of setting an equipoise on emptiness, and by way of the stages of newly attaining a special capacity to overcome the four manifest conceptions of apprehender and apprehended as inherently existent, are the same in both the great and small vehicles. So that's one of those sentences that is a paragraph. Okay? You know, when we talk about how language shapes the way we think, here you can see, you know, you have to have the ability to take all this material and add it all together to, you know, get where you're going. So what this is meaning is, okay, moreover, positing the division of the path of preparation into four, heat, peak, fortitude, and supermundane, okay? And now we're positing it by way of two things, okay? One is the stages of the gradual diminishment of the elaborations of dual appearance at the time of setting an equipoise on emptiness, okay? So when you're in meditative equipoise on emptiness, there is a gradual diminishment of the elaborations of dualistic appearance. Okay, so those four stages are differentiated because there's this gradual diminishment. Okay, so when we're talking about the elaborations of dualistic appearance can mean different things. It can mean the appearance of subject and object, which is the main meaning here in this particular case. It can also mean the appearance of inherent existence. Yeah, it can mean the appearance of conventionalities. Yeah, because whenever you have the appearance of conventionalities, there's the appearance of, you know, for ordinary beings, there's the appearance of inherent existence and of subject and object. Okay, so these four are differentiated because there's this gradual diminishment of these elaborations of dualistic appearance. Elaborations means grasping, okay, elaborating dualism where there isn't any. Yeah, it's a nice kind of word, isn't it? Elaborations of true existence. We usually think elaborations, you know, it's kind of cool, but this is, you know, you're elaborating on something that doesn't need elaboration, you know, creating stuff that isn't there. So it's differentiated by that, and second, by way of the stages of newly attaining a special capacity to overcome the four manifest conceptions of apprehender and apprehended as inherently existent. Okay? So, the four manifest conceptions of apprehender and apprehended have to do with seeing the object as truly existent and seeing the subject as truly existent. Okay? So, at the same time that there is this reduction in, you know, the elaborations, the grasping at dual appearance, yeah, there's also attaining a new capacity to overcome the conceptions that are grasping at true existence. That's what it means, okay? Because when we talk about the conceptions of apprehender and apprehended, yeah, that means the conceptions of true existence about the subject and object. So on one hand, you're increasing your ability to overcome the grasping at true existence of subject and object. And at the same time, there's this diminishment in the elaborations of dualistic appearance. So the two go together, aren't they? You know, the less we grasp at the dual appearance, the less it's going to, the more it's going to be overcome. Okay? So how this happens, okay? So on the heat stage, first of all, heat is called... let's go back before we start that. So these same two things about diminishing the elaboration of true existence and overcoming the ability to... or gaining more capacity to overcome the conception or the grasping at apprehender and apprehended, these are the same on the fundamental vehicle and the great vehicle. Yeah, so it's making the point that the fundamental vehicle path of preparation, the Mahayana path of preparation, aren't differentiated by those two things in terms of the appearance, you know, how much capacity you have to overcome grasping apprehender and apprehended and the diminishment of the elaborations. But they're differentiated in terms of the merit. Okay, that's you got that point? Okay, so let's look at the four stages, what you're doing on all four of them. So heat is the first one, and it's called heat because there's this sign that the fire of non-conceptual wisdom of the path of accumulation, path of seeing, will be generated. Okay, so it's called heat because you're getting warm. Yeah? you still have, you know, kind of maybe half of a countless great eon to collect merit, but, you know, you're getting warm. So the, you know, the blazing fire of the path of seeing that's going to start to burn up all the defilements, you know, you're getting some heat from that. Okay? So, and also at the heat, you attain a new meditative stabilization that is a clear conceptual realization of emptiness. Okay? So as opposed to the path of accumulation, your conceptual understanding of emptiness is much clearer than before. So you're getting warm. Okay? Then the peak, the second stage of the path of preparation peak, what happens there is that the roots of virtue can't be destroyed by anger and wrong views. So that's really nice, you know, because in our root of virtue, you know, we make work really hard creating merit and, you know, reciting and meditating and studying and everything. But when we get angry, then the anger really impedes the ripening, yeah? So depending on who we get angry at, that really influences how much merit we destroy. Because as we get, you know, if we get angry at a bodhisattva, you know, the higher the level of the bodhisattva and the more intense our anger, then the more the merit is destroyed. Okay? So that's why we have to be really careful about getting angry. Yeah. And you can kind of feel it, you know, in your mind. Like, just like the other day, you know, we just all, with the ordinations and everything, you could really feel how much merit that there was and how everything, you know, we all just felt so good. You can feel that. Then when you get really angry, you know, and you're stuck in your anger, that feeling is not there, is it? It's gone. Yeah. So you can really feel, you know, how the anger destroys the merit. And also the wrong views. When we generate really stubborn wrong views, that can impede the merit from ripening. So, it, you know, the way the merit gets impeded can be different, you know, in different situations. Sometimes it just means that something that might have ripened in a very strong positive way ripens in a weaker way, or a long positive, long pleasurable effect ripens as a short one. Okay? But in cases of when there's very intense anger, especially at a bodhisattva, it can be like burning a seed where, you know, a seed can't grow anything at all. Yeah, so we have to be very careful about getting angry at bodhisattvas and with people who are strong objects of karma for us. Okay, but once you attain the path of the peak stage of the path of preparation, our roots of virtue can't be destroyed by anger and wrong views, which is nice. Okay? And we newly attain a meditative stabilization that is a heightening of the conceptual appearance the conceptual perception of emptiness. So on heat, we got a clearer conceptual realization on emptiness. On heat, that conceptual perception of emptiness was heightened and increased. Okay? So then you can see why there's going to be a diminishment in the elaborations of true existence and a new ability to overcome the grasping at apprehender and apprehended. Then on fortitude, okay, fortitude is so-called because we're no longer afraid of emptiness. On the lower stages, we can be afraid of emptiness. Remember, you know, that story about the guy who was meditating and he was getting close to understanding and he grabbed his shirt, like, you know. And we can see this in ourselves sometimes. Sometimes just even hearing the teachings on emptiness, people get afraid. You can tell that kind of by the kinds of questions sometimes that come in from people. It's like, wait a minute, this is, and it's just the teaching. It's just hearing a little bit, you know, a vague idea. It's like, wait, are you telling me I don't exist, that none of these things exist, that everything I've worked so hard to get in my life is just illusory? Yeah, and it can really frighten people, you know, in a number of different ways. First, just the fact that it's illusory, or, you know, it's not real and solid. But another way is that one's whole, how we've constructed our life and what we've thought as valuable, how we should spend our time, what our goals are in life. You know, an understanding of emptiness revolutionizes all of that. You know, it makes you ask, well, what in the world am I doing? You know, I'm sitting here working so hard, you know, to have a career and to make money and to have my family and to have my reputation and my status and my social life and a comfortable life. And now you're telling me not only are these things all transitory and impermanent, but, you know, they aren't even real. So what have I been doing with my whole life? So that can be terrifying for people. You know, when you really invest a lot of time and energy going along a certain path in your life, and then, you know, you have to reassess it. It's very scary emotionally for people. And I think that's one of the reasons why Venerable Mingjia a few days ago was saying it's good to ordain when you're young, because you haven't invested so much time going down the wrong path. So you don't get so frightened when you finally go, oops, you know, and when you have to change how you think and, you know, steer your mind going in another direction. Okay? But, you know, when we teach people, I mean, we should have compassion when people get frightened. You know, just even hearing the teaching. And then also be aware of it ourselves, that when we're meditating on emptiness, sometimes some fear may come up. And when that fear comes up, instead of going, uh-oh, I'm scared, to say, oh, good, I'm getting somewhere. Okay? So to react to that thing, yeah, it's like, oh, you know, kind of my solid view of the world is getting challenged. This is good. Instead of, you know, if I realize, oh, I want my solid view of the world to get challenged. No, I want my view of this big I that's in the middle of everything and creating such problem. I want that to be challenged. Okay? So also on the fortitude level, then we're no longer born in the lower realms through the force of polluted karma and afflictions. So it doesn't mean that you no longer create bad karma, or that all your bad karma's gone, but it just means you're no longer reborn in the lower realms due to that polluted karma and the afflictions. So again, you know, you can see that you're getting more, greater and greater levels of security as you practice the path. And this is real security, isn't it? You know, financial security, relationship security, forget those, you know, you're never going to have them. Are you? You know? I mean, what you get in samsara is completely potluck. Even though you work very hard. But here you can see, if you get to the stage where your virtue's not going to be destroyed by anger, well, that's security, isn't it? Yeah, because my anger isn't going to be so strong anymore. It's not going to make a mess of my practice. And then when you get to this point where, you know, I'm not going to be born in the lower realms anymore, you know, due to karma and afflictions. Oh, that's really good. You know, that's kind of a relief, isn't it? Okay? So that's real security. And also on fortitude, you newly attain a meditative stabilization where the appearance of the object, emptiness, is no longer ascertained in contradistinction to the subject, the mind of insight. Okay, so at the beginning, okay, we'll put it this way, in the heat and peak, the first two stages, the subject and object both appear during meditative equipoise. Okay, so both the subject, the mind meditating on emptiness, and the object, emptiness, both of them appearing, and they're both appearing true existence. And the mind, the meditator can ascertain both of them. Okay, so there's a feeling of emptiness as the object. Okay, on the first, you know, it's like, oh, I'm meditating on emptiness. Emptiness is the object. And the consciousness realizing it, you know, my wisdom, oh, that's the subject. So there's a feeling of those two things. Even though you're meditating on the emptiness of yourself, okay, the self, and even though it's not a coarse understanding of emptiness as the way it was before you actualized insight. Yeah. So once you actualize this insight, this union of serenity and insight, you know, it's a much deeper realization of emptiness. It's not coarse like that before. But still, there's a feeling of, you know, emptiness is there and my mind is here and my mind is realizing emptiness. Yeah. Even though emptiness is the lack of inherent existence. Okay, because it's still conceptual, so there's still that conceptual appearance, which also is a factor in dualistic appearance. Okay, so that's there in the heat and peak stages. Okay, so you abide in space-like meditation. Yeah, and the object you were analyzing to see if it was inherently existent doesn't appear. So you might be analyzing the self to see if it exists inherently, and at the beginning the self appears, and the emptiness of the self appears, and the subject realizing that emptiness appears. But what's gradually happening is that the self, the object that you're analyzing, isn't appearing, and then you just have emptiness as the object, and your consciousness as, you know, your wisdom as the subject. And so that is starting to go down in the fortitude, okay? Because in the fortitude stage, the appearance of the object as empty of emptiness is no longer ascertained in contradistinction to the subject, yeah, which is your wisdom. Yeah, so the object of emptiness is not being ascertained as truly existent at that time. It's still appearing truly existent, but it's not being ascertained that way. Okay, so in the heat and peak stages, the ability to forsake the grasping at true existence with respect to objects increases. Yeah, and now the conceptual aspect of the ascertainment disappears to the point where even though there is still the appearance or the image of emptiness, the meditator doesn't recognize it as such. So there's still, on fortitude, there's still the appearance of emptiness as truly existent. Yeah, there's still, you know, some conceptual appearance of emptiness, but the meditator doesn't recognize it as such. So it's, the meditator isn't ascertaining it in that way. Okay? And then when you get to the supreme mundane dharma, you newly attain a meditative stabilization that is immediately precedes a speedy generation of the path of seeing. And so on the supreme mundane dharma, now the qualities of the subject can't be ascertained. Yeah, so on the fortitude, the object emptiness isn't being ascertained as truly existent, and on supreme mundane dharma, the subject, the insight, the wisdom isn't being ascertained as truly existent. And so the sense of the object disappears first, you know, on fortitude, because it's much more difficult to forsake holding to the inherent existence of the subject. Yeah, which makes sense, isn't it? You know, it's always easy to let go of something on the side of the object than to let go of this feeling of there being a real subject that is apprehending it. Okay, so what's happening, what we're seeing here, is a diminishment in the ascertainment, you know, of the subject and object as being truly existent. And slowly, you know, the strength of the appearance of them as being truly existent is also decreasing. Okay, so what is happening is that you're wearing away at that conceptual appearance of emptiness. Okay, so somebody asked before, how do you wear away at the conceptual realization of emptiness? And this is kind of how you do it. You know, it's first in terms of the object and then in terms of the subject. Okay, yeah?
Question. Then that always then comes up again about what we learned, that we first realize the emptiness of the self and then as the phenomena follows. So
yeah, well, you're meditating on the emptiness of the self. Okay, and then you can use the, you know, when you're still at the level of conceptual realization, then one that it's they say it's easier to realize the emptiness of the self because the self, we can see that it's imputed much more easily. Okay, and once you can do that, then you just have to shift your mind to other objects. You don't need to do a whole big analytical process all over to see that the object is, that other phenomena are also empty of true existence. Okay, but here, so you might be meditating on the emptiness of the self or the emptiness of all phenomena, but what disappears first is the strength of the appearance of the object emptiness being truly existent, and then the strength of the appearance of one of the mind that's apprehending emptiness as being truly existent. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so you can see that what's happening here is, you know, it's like, well, first of all, even before you get the serenity and insight, that union, you know, I mean, we always, in all of our perceptions, there's my mind and there's an object, you know, and they're so completely distinct and unrelated, and we think that they're totally independent of each other. Like my mind that's perceiving this thing does not depend on the object. Yeah, and the object that's being perceived does not depend on the mind perceiving it. You know, we see these things as so, you know. Then you start meditating on emptiness, and these things are still appearing truly existent, but you're meditating on emptiness, so that's clearly challenging your view. But then emptiness itself is appearing truly existent. Okay, because it's a conceptual apprehension. So there's me here and emptiness there. Yeah, but as you meditate more and more, because you're meditating on emptiness, yeah, you're not meditating on love or compassion or something else, you're meditating on emptiness, then ascertaining emptiness is true existent and ascertaining your mind that's apprehending it as true existence, both of these are getting worn down. Okay, and the force of the conceptual appearance of emptiness is getting worn down, and the strength of emptiness appearing as an object separated from the mind is getting worn down, and the strength of the appearance of the mind being separate from emptiness is getting worn down. Okay, and when you get to the supreme mundane Dharma, okay, You're very close to a direct perception, because you know you're not ascertaining the object, you're not as true existing, you're not ascertaining the subject as true existing. You're really almost getting there. And as soon as that meditative equipoise becomes the uninterrupted path of the path of seeing that starts to eliminate the artificial afflictions, then you're on the path of seeing. Okay? Because that uninterrupted path, you've worn down that conceptual appearance, and then when it's gone, the instant it's gone, you have the direct perception of emptiness, and that's the uninterrupted path on the path of seeing. You know, and that's real security, you know, because once you've realized emptiness directly, boy, you know, that one's never going to go away. Okay? Of course, you have to keep developing it, but, you know, I don't think you can actually lose it. Okay, so now the text continues here. Because of that, the four Mahayana paths of preparation, heat and so forth, of one who has previously the realization of a fundamental vehicle foe destroyer must be posited in terms of boundaries which are a special mode of conjunction with the great waves of the two collections. Okay, so remember on the fundamental vehicle, you know, the demarcation of the path of preparation, demarcation of the path of seeing, they're the same. Yeah. So here, you know, you're not positing the difference between the fundamental vehicle and the Mahayana vehicle, path of preparation and path of seeing, in terms of the emptiness that they're perceiving or anything like that. It's in terms of the strength of the two collections, and in particular the collection of merit. Okay? Because somebody on the fundamental vehicle path doesn't have to accumulate so much merit to go up to path of seeing, whereas somebody on the Mahayana does. Okay? So it is posited that one who has a prior realization of a fundamental vehicle foe destroyer attains the Mahayana heat path of preparation in the second moment following the completion of accumulating however much of the two collections must be accumulated at the time of the Mahayana path of accumulation. And this mode of procedure is similar until the eighth ground. Okay, so you have a fundamental vehicle, arhat, right? They're free of all afflictive obscurations. So in terms of that, they're more advanced than a bodhisattva on the path of accumulation or path of preparation or path of seeing. Okay? So in terms of their understanding of emptiness, the true cessations they've actualized, you know, they're more advanced. However, when they get woken up by the Buddha and they first generate bodhicitta, they enter the bodhisattva path from the very beginning. They don't enter the bodhisattva path corresponding to a level of their realization of emptiness. They enter the bodhisattva path corresponding to the level of their merit. So they have to start all over on the bodhisattva path of accumulation, because they have to accumulate all this incredible merit that can only be accumulated by the force of bodhicitta. Okay, because bodhicitta is one of the big things, the big factors that enables us to accumulate a lot of merit very quickly because of the nobleness of that mind. I mean, that mind is working for the benefit of each and every sentient being. So anything a bodhisattva does is incredibly powerful because they're working for the benefit of these limitless living beings. So it's really quite amazing what they're doing. So even they breathe, even they hand you something, you know, the bodhicitta motivation makes these actions, you know, incredible accumulation of merit. Yeah, that somebody practicing on the fundamental vehicle path doesn't create by breathing or handing you those things because they don't have the bodhicitta motivation. Okay, so the bodhisattvas have so much more merit there, and they have to accumulate so much more merit that the foe destroyers from the fundamental vehicle start all over on the bodhisattva path. Okay, so that's what it's emphasizing here. Okay, that bodhisattva enters the path of accumulation When they generate bodhicitta and they have that amount of merit needed to enter the Mahayana path of accumulation, and they enter the Mahayana path of preparation, not when they achieve a unity of serenity and insight, because they already have that, but when they have the merit necessary to enter the Mahayana path of preparation. And so, same way for generating the Mahayana path of seeing for those arhats, and for each of the 10 bhumis all the way up to the Mahayana path of no more learning.
To the 8th?
To the 8th, but all the way up to to the 8th bhumi, right? And then the last 3 bhumis, then they're eliminating the cognitive obscurations. Yeah. So all the way up to the 8th bhumi, that's the determining thing, is the level of merit. Okay? Yeah, because it says this mode of procedure is similar until the 8th ground. For in order for the antidote, the wisdom realizing emptiness, to act as the antidote to the object of abandonment, the obstructions or the obscurations to omniscience, it is necessary to accumulate the great collection of merit for 2 periods of countless eons. Okay? So in order to get yourself to the 8th bhumi, where you start, or the 8th ground, where you start eliminating the cognitive obscurations, you have had to accumulate 2 countless gradients of merit. One on the path of accumulation, path of preparation of the Mahayana, and the second on the first 8 bhumis of a bodhisattva. Okay. Similarly, Gyaltsab's great commentary on Maitreya's sublime continuum of the great vehicle says, okay, here and solitary realizer foe destroyers have directly realized both subtle selflessnesses. So they've realized the subtle selflessness of phenomena, subtle selflessness of persons. Okay. Nonetheless, at the time of entering the paths of the Mahayana, they definitely enter from the path of accumulation. Okay. This is because, by way of hearing and thinking, they initially settle well the limitless divisions of instances which are included within the accumulation of merit. Okay, so by hearing and thinking about the Mahayana path, and hearing and thinking of all the Mahayana teachings, because all these arhats may never have heard much of the Mahayana teachings, so they have to start all over generating, you know, the wisdom of hearing and the wisdom of thinking about the Mahayana. And here we're talking about the method side of the path, okay, all the bodhisattva practices. So they initially settle well the limitless divisions of instances which are included in the accumulation of merit. So all the different ways you can accumulate merit, and what makes merit strong and what makes it weak, and who are positive objects of accumulation of merit, and all those things. So they understand that, okay, and then they familiarize with those for one period of countless eons on the path of accumulation, a path of preparation, because it's by way of mundane states arisen from meditation and subsequent to that attain the good qualities which are included within the first ground, the 12 sets of 100 qualities and so forth. Okay, so they initially have to settle well through hearing and thinking all the different bodhisattva practices. They have to understand what they are that are included in the accumulation of merit. Okay, then they have to familiarize themselves with those for a period of countless gradient. Okay, and they're doing it by way of mundane states arisen from meditation, because they're meditating on conventional truths to accumulate merit. And they do that on the path of accumulation, path of preparation. And subsequent to that, they attain the good qualities that are included within the first ground. So after accumulating all that merit on the path of accumulation, path of preparation of the bodhisattva, then they go on to the bodhisattva path of seeing, and which is the first ground, where you start the first ground. And with the first ground, you start the 12 sets of 100 qualities and so forth, which we will get into, because there are different qualities that you attain on the... There's 12 sets of qualities that get enhanced as you go through the bodhisattva grounds. Okay? So that's Gyaltsa Jay's quote from on his commentary on Gyulama. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, we'll go on then. Moreover, although a bodhisattva abiding in the four Mahayana paths of preparation, heat and so forth, has not passed beyond the ground of common beings, he or she is said to possess inconceivable good qualities. So on path of preparation, path of seeing, you're not an Arya if you're a new bodhisattva. You're not an Arya. If you come from the fundamental vehicle as an arhat, then you are an Arya. But here, you know, an initial bodhisattva, one who doesn't go through fundamental vehicle first, they're not an Arya. So they haven't passed beyond the grounds, they're still a common being. Okay? But the cloud of jewels, the Ratna Megha Sutra says, yeah, even if a bodhisattva who abides on this ground, the Mahayana path of preparation, is a common being, he or she has thoroughly passed beyond the troubles of children. Here, children, it means childish sentient beings. So childish sentient beings are the ones who are completely involved in the eight worldly concerns, you know, and completely cultivating, grasping a true existence, okay? So they've thoroughly passed beyond the troubles of children and possess countless good qualities of meditative stabilization, retention, complete liberation, clairvoyance, and so forth. So by the force of their serenity, then they have attained many of these super normal powers, okay? Yeah.
You said that people in the path of preparation and path of seeing were not Aryas, but is that what you meant to say?
I meant path of accumulation, path of preparation,
yeah,
aren't Aryas. Okay. Yeah. So they're still ordinary beings, but they're on the Mahayana path. They aren't considered childish. Okay. So then remember I was telling you before about the 22 kinds of bodhicitta? So... and there were four of them that were on the path of accumulation. Then there's one of them on the path of preparation, and it's called fire-like bodhicitta. And just as fire consumes its fuel, this bodhicitta enables the bodhisattva to burn the obscurations to knowing the three unborn natures that are the objects of the three knowers. Okay, so there's three knowers. When you study Abhisamaya Alankara, the ornament of clear realizations, it's all about three knowers. And this bodhicitta is able to burn the obscurations that prevent you from seeing the nature or the emptiness of the objects of these three knowers. Okay, so the first knower is the knower of the basis, which is the wisdom of hearers and solitary realizer, arhats. Okay, the knower of the basis. So wisdom of hearer and solitary realizer, arhats. And its object, okay, it realizes the unborn nature, that is the emptiness of the Four Noble Truths. Okay, so this bodhicitta is, you know, getting rid of the obstacles that prevent seeing the emptiness of the Four Noble Truths, and the Four Noble Truths is the object of the knower of the bases. Okay. Then the second knower is the knower of the path, and this is the wisdom of the Arya Bodhisattvas. Okay. And so it realizes the unborn nature of the five paths. So the five Bodhisattva paths. And then the third knower is the knower of all. This is possessed by a Buddha, which is the omniscient wisdom of the Buddhas. And it realizes the unborn nature of the aspects of all phenomena. So it realizes unborn nature means the emptiness. Okay? Things are not inherently produced, not inherently born, don't inherently come into existence or into being.
What is that knower called?
The knower of all aspects, the last one. Okay, so you have the knower of the basis, knower of the path, and the knower of all aspects. Knower of the basis is the wisdom of the fundamental vehicle arhats, okay, or aryas. The knower of the path is the wisdom of the bodhisattvas, and the knower of all is the omniscient wisdom of the Buddha. Okay, so this whole huge text is written about these three knowers. Yeah. Yes.
These are wisdom consciousnesses.
Yeah.
And so, why are they called bodhicitta? I'm confused.
Because bodhicitta. Remember, there's ultimate bodhicitta and conventional bodhicitta.
Yeah.
So ultimate bodhicitta is the wisdom realizing emptiness.
Right.
So that's what it's called bodhicitta. Yeah. Okay. We did the path of preparation in one evening.
Well, you did it in one evening.
But we still have.
We have a few evenings.
You know. Okay.
Question.
Yeah.
What is the, you may have said it before, but this definition of retention?
Retention. I think what that is the ability to remember all of the teachings you've heard. I think that's what it is. I'm not certain. Okay. Yeah?
Last week, you were talking about path of accumulation and all of these wonderful things that can happen, like emanation bodies and going to your teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering, at that point, how could a person, you'd be doing all these virtuous things, so there wouldn't be the opportunity for negativity to come up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But tonight you're saying that during the peak, that virtue can't be destroyed by anger.
Mm-hmm.
This is further along in the progression, so I'm just wondering, how would
Well, because on the path of accumulation, you may be doing a lot of virtuous things, but you haven't abandoned the afflictions yet. So they're still there, and the seeds are still there. So if you lose your mindfulness, then an affliction can come up.
But it sounds like your whole experience would be listening to teachings, especially when you're sending out these emanation lines.
Yeah, but you can listen to teachings and get angry at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're doing all of this, but it doesn't mean they have 100% mindfulness all the time. And they still have the afflictions and the seeds of the afflictions on path of accumulation, and these afflictions can arise. Remember Shariputra got angry at the person who, didn't want his hand after he cut it off just for him? Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, why?
Well, there could be many arguments, I suppose.
Okay.
With the latest one.
Yes.
It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
It actually makes no sense.
For a Buddha not to have bodhicitta.
No sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And also, it could be like a exalted wisdom that's not manifest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about ultimate bodhicitta, yes, the Buddha has the ultimate bodhicitta. But even conventional bodhicitta, the Buddha wants all sentient beings to attain enlightenment. So the bodhicitta isn't necessarily for oneself, it's for everybody.
Oh, that helps, because the object was where that definition that we got kind of messed me up. But if the object is everybody else's enlightenment, then, Oh, good. I'm relieved.
You glad that the Buddha still has bodhicitta?
I'm glad we have a really good reason why.
Okay. So, you know, even if not all of this is real clear to your mind, that's okay. It's giving you some idea of, you know, how the path goes and how we practice and the realizations that we need to develop. Okay? And we're getting some teachings about emptiness here, aren't we? You know? And some teachings about bodhicitta. So and also, I think understanding this really helps us understand refuge much better. Yeah? And even though the path of accumulation, path of preparation, bodhisattvas, are not included in the Sangha refuge, the Sangha jewel, because the Sangha jewel is Aryas, still, you know, when we get to the path of seeing, we'll understand better about the Sangha jewel. But we're seeing beforehand what one is working with and has to realize clearly before even getting to the point of becoming a part of the Sangha jewel. Okay? So it's really helping us, I think, understand, you know, what the Sangha jewel is, and of course what the Dharma jewel is, because the Dharma jewel is the true paths and true cessations. Yeah? Which involve direct perception. And here we're seeing of everything you have to do before you even get the direct perception of emptiness. Okay?
And are they using the reasonings on these first two paths? That we've talked about the path of accumulation now and the path of preparation.
Yeah.
And these are conceptual. So are they using the reasonings as four-point analysis or one of those as their starting point?
Right. Yeah, they're using the reasonings that we study, but their meditation, we're thinking about those reasonings in a very, very gross manner. You know, their way of thinking about them when they're doing the analysis isn't a lot of words and stuff. It's analytical, but it's much more subtle than what our mind is doing.
And a lot of it is with a very subtle mind looking at the object of negation.
Looking at the lack of object of negation. You can't look at the object of negation because it doesn't exist.
But the conception does.
The conception exists, but what you want to realize is not the conception. You want to realize the lack of the object of negation. Because when you realize that, then the conception or the grasping at that object can't stand up.
But you have to bring up that conception to tear it apart.
The conception is there all the time. Yeah, we have to realize what it is we're conceiving of and what we're grasping. In the four-point analysis, the first thing is to get very clear what the object of negation is. The object of negation, we're involved with it most of the time, but we just don't see it clearly. So that's why the first step of the four-point analysis is to get a good idea of what it is. If it existed, you know, what would it be? And we're completely oblivious to it because we're so convinced that how we perceive things is the way they exist. Yeah. So object and negation, what's that? You know, something miles away, you know, has nothing to do because I see reality. Yeah.
And studying this also gives fuel to the prayers about meeting the tantric teachings and, you know, why it would be so very, very important to have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah. You see, it takes a long time, and it's a slow process, and why it's valuable to make prayers to be able to meet the Tantra, but not just meet it, to be a proper vehicle to practice it. Yeah. We've met it, but are we proper vehicles? Yeah. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in 10 directions. May the light of Losam's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Dhruvaratna mandala kamniryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. Throwing mountain, pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenresi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of the impotent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West flourish.